This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to cover a subject of great importance. It's kind of a case study in how the pharmaceutical industry tends to extend its tentacles, getting more and more people to utilize medications where sometimes it's justified, but in many cases, overextending the application of drugs to problems which have solutions that lie elsewhere. The book is ADHD Nation, Children, Doctors, Big Pharma, and the Making of an American Epidemic. We're talking to investigative journalist Alan Schwartz. He's a Pulitzer Prize-nominated national correspondent of the New York Times. And his claim to fame, among many others, is especially in the area of blowing the whistle on the seriousness of concussions among football players of all ages. He's written more than 100 articles on that subject. And then he turned his attention to writing controversial pieces on young people abusing Adderall and other stimulant medications for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and subsequently came out with the book ADHD Nation. So it's a pleasure to introduce Alan Schwartz. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine.
Oh, thanks, Doc. It's nice to be here.
It's my pleasure. Okay, so give us a little background on this subject. First of all, what's the prevalence? It's kind of alarming that so many kids these days are being diagnosed with this. And, you know, compared to other industrialized countries across the world, there's a real discrepancy, isn't there?
Well, yes. And just to lay some groundwork, ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, which is, for better or for worse, the official name for a disorder that the American Psychiatric Association has sort of, knighted, where a child usually, but sometimes adult, is just so hyperactive, so distractible, can't pay attention, won't pay attention. And just cannot focus, on usually schoolwork or things at home, and so impulsive that they just can't seem to, understand the costs of certain motions and actions, they've given it a label, in order to try to classify folks in such a way that they might be able to receive help and treatments, sometimes pharmaceutical, often pharmaceutical, but sometimes not. And so that's the idea, okay, is to have people who are so far at one end of a spectrum, and the bad end, theoretically, that, you know, the grown-ups can intervene and try to help. The thing is that over the roughly 50 years that what we now call ADHD has spent growing, there has become such an enthusiasm for the diagnosis, and frankly, such sloppy use of the diagnosis and making of the diagnosis, that we now have 11% of current children, diagnosed with this, supposedly lifelong, very serious brain disorder. Not only is it 11% now, but 15% of children get diagnosed before they leave high school. And it's 20% of boys across the United States that get diagnosed with, this psychiatric condition. And I think if you talk to most people, they say, that can't be accurate. I mean, that there can't be that many kids with, you know, severe attention and hyperactivity problems. Of course, it all comes down to, you know, the definition of severe and the definition of worthy of intervention. And so what the book is it's a look at how over these 50 years we have allowed as a society a virtual generation of children to be told there's something wrong with your brain when in, you know, half the cases there isn't. Something else might be wrong with the kid, going wrong with the kid. Might have, you know, anxiety problems, bad diet, bad, you know, lack of exercise, trauma, bullying in school. Lots of things can cause the behaviors that we end up calling ADHD. You know, not all that coughs is bronchitis, and not all that is distractible is ADHD. But we've jumped to the diagnosis so often, and with so little concern for how often we're doing it, that we've allowed what one of the founders or fathers of the diagnosis itself now calls the rampant and nationwide mishandling of ADHD in children a, quote, national disaster of dangerous proportions, unquote. This is the story of how we got here.
That's pretty stark statistics that you've laid out there. So in other countries, modern industrialized countries, do they recognize this differently? Is there a disparity? And do they treat it differently? Because, I mean, there's two issues here. One is the widespread diagnosis of ADHD. And the other is, okay, let's assume that, you know, perhaps this is a pervasive phenomenon. Kids are distractible. The application of a drug fix to this problem. That's, I think, the second element that concerns us.
Well, to dispatch with the first part, yes, there's really no other country that handles ADHD or what we call ADHD the same way as the United States. The United States has always had far more enthusiasm for this than any other country. Now, Australia, okay, has had its moments where it has had an alarming number of diagnoses well beyond what most people would consider appropriate. Great Britain is, you know, catching up a little bit. You know, different countries have different paces at which they allow what is sometimes normal children's behavior, or just, you know, the unpleasant end of the bell curve, you know, children's behavior to be called a clinical psychological problem. And, of course, different societies have different views toward the use of medications to treat psychiatric disorders. And I'm certainly not going to suggest that, you know, under various circumstances, a patient should not have the option of taking medication for his or her psychiatric condition. But here we have millions upon millions of kids being given these very strong medications, Adderall sort of being the standard bearer for amphetamine, Ritalin and Concerta being the standard bearer for methylphenidate. They're virtually identical, or at least certainly in effect they are. That, you know, the United States is just very quick to go to the medicine cabinet. And I'm, by the way, not inherently criticizing that, but it is certainly true that for various reasons, and we'll, I'm sure, talk about, you know, the influence of the pharmaceutical industry on all this. For whatever reason, the United States is far ahead of the rest of the world. And the last reason being that the definition that the United States uses for what we call ADHD, devised by the American Psychiatric Association in what's called the DSM, is considerably more loose of a definition than the one that the rest of the world generally uses.
Well, let's take a look at that. You know, what are the criteria? They seem rather vague, and I've seen some online questionnaires. In fact, for fun, I've taken a few, and you know, I could definitely fit the criteria for attention deficit disorder. You know, they're so vague, they're so loose. Virtually anyone can audition for this problem.
Well, I mean, we want to be careful in separating what is, for better or for worse, the official definition of ADHD, published by the American Psychiatric Association in the DSM, from a lot of the garbage that's strewn about the web, these online questionnaires where there are just these six questions and, you know, everybody can feel distractible and everybody can forget appointments or, you know, feel anxious. I mean, I just want to, now they both have lots of problems. But the online quizzes are not necessarily the responsibility of the APA. However, the APA official definition has, now I don't want to misspeak here because I haven't looked in a while, okay? Mm-hmm. But for a long time, certainly, it was 18 symptoms separated into three categories. I believe they looked at that a couple of years ago, regardless. Where, you know, a child, again, typically, but of course adults, you know, are eligible for this diagnosis as well. You know, it's very easily distracted. You know, fidgets with hands or feet. You know, and of course, each of these sounds pretty squishy, yeah. You know? But the idea was that these symptoms, these issues in behavior were supposed to be severe. We're supposed to be impairing the child in two different settings, generally home and school.
But there seems to be a lot of diagnostic creep. There's diagnostic creep because...
Well, yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing is that, you know, what's your definition of severe? Well, you know, that's in the eye of the beholder and in the eye of the parent and the eye of the teacher and the eye of the doctor. And you find... A lot of folks thinking that, you know, well, you know, maybe my kid has it. And there's, you know, it's not seen as that big of a deal anymore. I mean, many people will say there's a terrible stigma to ADHD. And while I understand some people's feelings, I do, I mean, there can't be that much of a stigma if 20% of boys are getting it. I mean, come on. You know, they're in plenty good company at this point. So, you know, it doesn't seem to be particularly dissuasive to people.
And in fact, the reverse, excuse me, there seems to be perverse incentives to get your kid diagnosed, to actually shop the diagnosis. I've been asked by some friends of mine, you know, my kid's getting ready to take his SATs. I'd like to take my kid to a pediatric neurologist. Do you know any good ones? Who can prescribe him some medication? His grades aren't that good. He needs better scores. And they're even looking for a little more test allowance time that's afforded to kids who have a disorder.
Well, there's no question that happens, okay? I want to be careful to not suggest that, you know, a majority of cases are like that, okay? There's a lot of factors at work here. But yes, because the medications help kids, you know, generally quite hyperactive or distractible kids to sort of sit down and concentrate, okay, which is something that adults do like and value. They, you know, can allow kids to study longer, and they do not make kids smarter. You know, they're not smart mm-hmm. pills, although they are often called that, but because they do not increase your inherent intelligence, your functional intelligence. But what they can do is they can just help you concentrate. And that is a powerful asset to have and to perhaps boost before tough times and, you know, hard study times in school. And of course, if your child is diagnosed with ADHD, which is considered an official learning disability, then he or she is eligible to receive extra time on tests and other accommodations afforded by the Americans with Disabilities Act and other laws regarding education. And again, I'm not putting that down, but you certainly, you know, don't, there's not a whole lot of incentive to get your child diagnosed with diabetes or tuberculosis, or moving into the psychiatric arena. You know, there's not a whole lot of benefit in getting them diagnosed with depression or bipolar disorder.
Right.
However, ADHD has sort of found this sweet spot where the diagnosis isn't that, you know, alarming, and the medications don't appear to have a whole lot of harm in many cases. Now, I'm sure people's ears are perking up and eyebrows are shooting up their forehead.
Right.
But what I mean is they don't appear. I use the word appear. Okay. So, you know, it seems some cases like an easy decision, because also parents and kids see other kids getting extra time and getting to use medications that they feel are an advantage, and say, well, why not me? So it's a weird situation where, yeah, there is some incentive to go get the diagnosis, which is part of what's at play here.
You have an interesting section of the book that kind of details the history of how they hit upon the possibility that a medication, I mean, this seems like counterintuitive, a medication that's designed as a stimulant that gets you revved up could actually have a paradoxical effect and calm these kids down. And this was kind of a serendipitous finding. Can you share that with our audience?
Yeah, I mean, what many people, including, you know, me for a little while, you know, and you just used the word paradoxical. As it turns out, while that feels correct, it actually isn't. And let me explain why. As we've said, ADHD medications fall into two categories. Amphetamine, which most people know what that is. And then methylphenidate, which might as well be amphetamine, but just has a different name. Okay? They both have virtually the same effects in human beings. And it was really only by accident that a doctor in Rhode Island in the 30s and 40s discovered that amphetamine, which he thought would help, he worked with a lot of hyperactive and distractible and really, really troubled kids. Okay. We're not talking about the sometimes mild to medium cases of ADHD that we have now, which, while important and we should care, I mean, we're talking about kids who couldn't live in their homes and kids who, you know, would today, you know, just have terrible, terrible problems. But anyway, they were receiving headaches from this other treatment they were receiving, and he thought, you know, maybe this new benzodrine might be able to help their headaches. And it didn't, but it did make help a lot of them sort of calm down and pay attention in school. I mean, it was crazy. Like, how in the world could that be possible? Hmm. Well, as it turns out, amphetamine and methylphenidate, ultimately, what they do is they help any human being be less distractible and be able to concentrate more or better or whatever. And not everybody, but in general. And so for someone who is severely hyperactive or impulsive or distractible, the difference is night and day. I mean, it can be amazing. And they will, because they have appeared not calm, you get the impression that this pill has calmed them down. Well, it really hasn't necessarily, because if you or I were to take Adderall or Concerta, depending on our own personal reaction to it, we too would slow down and be able to concentrate better. You know, you hear about stimulant and you hear, you know, you get the feeling like your hair is going to stand on end, like you're talking, like you're holding one of those, you know, touching one of those electric horns in the science fair. But it's really not. The word stimulant is a little bit of a misnomer, particularly in this context. It's more of a pill that can help you, you know, concentrate and be more in control of your ability to focus. I mean, it has other effects too, but in this context, that's really what we're talking about.
Okay, we've laid the groundwork for a discussion of ADHD Nation. And in part two, as we continue with our guest, Alan Schwartz, author of ADHD Nation, Children, Doctors, Big Pharma, and the Making of an American Epidemic, part two, we're going to focus on how there's been diagnostic creep and how Big Pharma and patient advocacy groups have, in a way, promoted, over-promoted, oversold this paradigm that can be helpful for, you know, admittedly for some kids, but has extended to now virtually 20% of boys, 11% of kids, and that's a stark statistic. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Alan Schwartz, investigative journalist, author of ADHD Nation. And this is Intelligent Medicine.